the last 26 years, those of us who have been following Jammu and Kashmir very closely, as I have heard party after party pay lip service to what has now become a cliche, the homecoming of Kashmiri Pandits. Every election in particular, you see a ferocious debate over who is responsible and what might bring Pandits home. In the meantime, that exodus is only one of the many elements that has polarized the discourse within the state, which is really something that all Indians need to worry about. Many pundits will in particular tell journalists, as they have told me, that you don't even bother to tell our stories. We may not fully agree with that, but it is true that for the first time now, Kashmiri pundits are looking to tell their story in their own words and not have their stories related by somebody else on their behalves. On this program today, we're looking at a new collection of first-person accounts by Kashmiri pundits of different generations called A Long Dream of Home and edited by two Kashmiri pundits, Siddharth Gigu and Varad Sharma. The book makes for a painful reading because you actually for the first time confront a grief that has become a permanent part of the lives of a community in which lakhs of people were 26 years ago forced into exile. Can this narrative shift from grief to one of optimism? Is there anything that gives us hope? Let's introduce on our program today, first, of course, Siddharth and Varad, both of whom have put together this anthology. Also, Neeru, a Kashmiri Pandit herself, who also has an essay in the book. General Hasnain, who has, of course, served as General Officer Commanding of 15 Corps, that's the Kashmir Valley. And, of course, Shashi Tharoor, a Member of Parliament of the Congress Party. Siddharth, you know, it's very, very moving. For example, you write about your grandfather in a way mentally altered by the fact that he had to leave home, how his memory dimmed, how you believe the early advent of Alzheimer's happens to him because of being pushed out of his home. And then you talk about your grandmother actually going home to die. And then suddenly, when she does pass away in Srinagar, you're confronted with this notion of what is home. You want to cremate her in Srinagar, and then you say, but isn't Jammu home now? And suddenly that displacement comes home like never before, and then you go down the highway with your grandmother's body at the back of the car. It's such a really a heartbreaking account. Is that what made you in a sense think of this book, that home has become an almost illusory concept?
5 years ago you invited me to NDTV studio, We the People.
Yes,
that was the completion of the 20th year of our exodus. And that is the first time after the show I got to meet Varad.
You met on that show?
Yes. Because you asked me the same question. My first novel, The Garden of Solitude, had come out. And you asked me about the mental trauma.
Yeah.
The trauma of displacement.
Yeah.
And how it affected a memory. After the show, Varad comes to me, and he was a student that time. He said, I read your novel and, you know, we must do something together. I said, hopefully, you know. And that's how it started, you know. It's taken us, 5 years to...
And you know, while I'm glad that you met on a program that I did 5 years ago, I'm also struck by the irony that from moment to now, actually nothing's moved.
Nothing has moved. You know, I was anticipating this question, and I was... that show, you asked the same question, what now? 20 years is a long time in a history of a community like ours, you know, which is an ethnic minority. And we ended on an optimistic note, if you remember, because we were talking about reconciliation. We were hopeful. I myself was hopeful that, you know, of course, I made a lot of trips to Kashmir after that. And my grandmother was still alive that time. She died in 2012. But my grandfather had passed away. He couldn't come to terms with a place called Jammu. You know,
why did you not cremate your grandmother in Srinagar? That was home for her.
Yes, yes.
And you write movingly about how in her last days she was actually looked after by Muslim doctors, Muslim nurses. Yeah. So in a sense, that embitterment that very naturally comes into the accounts of so many pundits, I don't sense that bitterness in you. I sense overwhelming sadness, but not hostility, not bitterness.
Yeah.
And those are two different sentiments.
I wonder, you know, my grandmother used to say in her the last days that, you know, she would like to go now. She was tired of living, but she loved life, you know. For the first time, she wanted to visit our ancestral house in Namagadal Khanakai Sokta. But that wasn't the plan. And my parents were already there. She fell sick. She was taken to the hospital, SMHS hospital, which is in a dilapidated condition, because that time the shrine was burnt, you know. And So I rushed to the I got off the airport. There was nobody willing to take me to Karanagar because the city was under curfew.
Yeah.
Then I kept pleading. There was one person, a taxi driver, who came to me. He said, I'll take you. I said, but how? Everybody is saying you can't go. It's curfew. He said, leave it to God. So I narrated the whole thing to him. He refused to take money from that. These instances of humanity is still there. I think that's one reason why Kashmir is still surviving, that instance of humanity. I rushed and I ran upstairs to the ward, and the matron was coming out. She said she just passed away. Then my dad, I mean, he was crying, I was crying. We thought, what do we do? Do we cremate her here? I mean, where our ancestors have been cremated, and yeah. there was a crematorium next to the hospital. Then my father and I said, no, our home is Jammu now. We may never get to go back. Maybe generations from now, maybe children, they might go to get back. And she would perhaps have wanted to be cremated in Jammu. And but when we were immersing the ashes, I was somehow struck by the irony of it, that the ashes are being taken to Pakistan, to a land which is responsible for what happened, you know.
Yeah.
But
you know, even when you say maybe Jammu is home, you of course don't mean it. It's there is home. Yeah. And then there is the enforced home. And let me bring you in, Shashi. You know, not just as a politician, but as somebody who is actually married to a Kashmiri Pandit. You know, I remember very vividly, one of my abiding memories of Sunanda is an interview that she gave me, taking a completely different position from you and your party on Article 370. She said that as a Pandit, she felt strongly that 370 must go. And she spoke about her experience of trying to go back, her experience of trying to buy a property as a woman. And so this is obviously something that's been discussed at home for you as well.
In fact, the thing about this book, I thought, Barkha, is it's actually very intensely emotional.
It is.
It's not a book about policy. It's not even much a book about politics. If you look through it, it's a deeply felt series of personal memories, longings, experiences. And it reminded me vividly of conversations with Sunanda and indeed with her family about the loss of home. In fact, this bit about this boy who wants to go back and get his books, and he can't get it, which is in the book. And it's one of the things Sunanda lamented, but she lost all her childhood books. The small things that exiles remember. I mean, she says all her childhood photographs were burned down when the terrorists burned her house. She has no photographs of her childhood. For her, this was an indescribable pain. And it was striking because before we met, she had gone back briefly once. And she had photographs of the ruins of her house in the village. And after we married, I took her back to that village. And we thought we'd at least see the ruins. And when we went back to the village of Bomai, a little north of Sopor, which had sadly been a hotbed of militancy, even the ruins were gone. There was just grass. Everything had been stripped bare. And balancing that sense of pain and loss was the extraordinary warmth of the welcome the villagers gave her. One of the people who hugged her was her own wet nurse. Her mother had been not very healthy when she was born. And so a lady from the village, a Muslim woman, had given her own milk as a baby. And this lady embracing her daughter coming to Sunanda as a sister, these were extremely powerful and emotional moments. So I said, I mean, do you want to rebuild the house here? And she said, who is going to protect us? Who's going to protect it? The villagers may show affection today. In fact, I took her father to the Hazrat Bal Mosque, and the custodian embraced him and said, come back. We are not complete without you. The same line that Siddharth says he's heard so often. But the truth is that we are not complete without you is actually literally true. There is no Kashmir without the Pandits in the sense that Kashmir has always meant. But you ask him whether he really thinks he'll take the risk of going back to the valley. I think the answer very clearly is that none so far feels safe enough to go. You said nothing has moved in 5 years. Strictly speaking, Omar Abdullah Wahyahi would object to that because the NC government did work with the centre to come up with a package, as you know, to relocate. No one has been able to do anything.
What I meant is that nothing has moved that has made...
No one has gone back.
That has enabled a homecoming.
But you know, you've still got people like Vijay Dharu sitting in this audience who's actually lived through the troubles.
And runs a school there.
And runs a school, a very impressive school.
But you know...
So there are other examples too.
But very few chose to stay back.
Yes.
And you must hear all the time, why don't you go back, things have improved.
One of our aims was to hear their story as well.
The Pandits who stayed back.
Yes, despite the dark decade of 90s.
Yes.
I spoke to a few. I said, you know, we need you to write an account of what happened, why you stayed back, and what happened after you stayed back. But it must be the truth, and it's for a book. They said, is it going to be, you know, public? I said, of course, it's going to be a book, and people will read. He said, then he can't, he's not, he was scared. He said, I can't write what happened. You know, there is a cost I have paid. There is a lot which happened to us. But we persisted, lingered on. Very handful of people stayed in the Shupor area, Badamin Bagh cantonment. You know, none of those people stayed in downtown, which was a war zone. General Hasnain would know.
You know, but the thing about the Kashmir Valley in particular, General Hasnain, is there are mirror images of grief. And I think Neeru writes this somewhere in her essay, saying grief knows no religion, right? So as this conflict rages on, as this insurgency rages on, as you add the Pakistan dimension, what you have is actually a scenario where there are many different kinds of suffering. But I think what the pundits believe is that their suffering has never been given an equivalent voice in the larger narrative, in the larger public attention. Now, as somebody who has actually served there, interacted with young people, do you find it alarming that an entire generation of young Kashmiris today is growing up without knowing what it feels like to actually live in a multi-religious society?
Outstanding question. Without reading this book, or rather, let's say, when I read this book, I realized that if I had read this book 5 years ago, I may have commanded my corps better.
Really?
I actually feel that. You know, there's something that I very intensely feel about Kashmir, about the valley. I don't think the nation has taken this issue seriously enough. Because, first of all, there hasn't been enough writing, and people have just not interacted.
Yeah.
You know, it's all stuck in Jammu, in the camps in Jammu, a few families in Delhi, and those who stayed back in Kashmir. You go to any part of the country and speak to people as to what is the plight of the Kashmiri Pandits, no one can explain you. But first of all, can I just take a second to say, why am I here? As a army man, why? What am I doing in this forum? I am also connected to the Kashmiri Pandit in the sense that my brother is married to a Kashmiri Pandit. Right? And for 44 years, I have only known calls, dhars and vakhlus everywhere. Right? So, that is an emotional attachment. But I have a professional take on what you're saying. When I went in the last tenure of mine, at the beginning of the tenure, I did ask some authorities, without naming anyone. I said, I want to go to a Visu camp. It's near Anantnag, between Anantnag and Kazikund, where the families were, 1,200 families were brought in on an experimental basis to bring back the Pandits to the valley and keep them in a camp and under protected conditions, in an artificial kind of a setup. But I was told, I think you're hurrying up a little too much. You know, I mean, without naming anyone, I was told, this message came to me, I think you need to go about doing your things on the other side, stabilizing the environment without looking at this issue of the return of the Pandits. And it goes back to that whole issue when I always kept believing that without the return of the Pandits, there's no stability here. So can I make a difference by going out and understanding their part of the story? Let me tell you, most people in Kashmir haven't heard this story. Today's generation, born in 88, 89 and 90, most of them don't know these stories because they have never sat together.
When you say you would have commanded your corps better, what is the one thing you think you may have done differently?
I remember 34 public meetings, which everyone used to criticize me for. I went down to the ground, to the grassroots, 34 times to meet the public. At least 5 times I would have met the Kashmiri Pandits.
But you did not.
I did not. I did it on the last week of my command and against everyone's wishes.
One of the unfortunate things, according to me as a journalist, that's happened to any conversation about Jammu and Kashmir is that there are set positions now that are identified with communities. We're actually looking at a very dangerous Hindu-Muslim fault line here, Shashi. While wanting to be nostalgic about Kashmiriyat, are we just being hopeless romantics? Has India just moved on? Is our politics of Jammu and Kashmir now so dangerously polarized that there is no Kashmiriyat in real terms?
Well, that's exactly what I think Bharat Sharma says in his essay, that Kashmiriyat is dead. I would have hoped not.
And yet each one of these stories speaks of the compassion of neighbors, of perfect strangers. So it's a contradiction.
It is a contradiction. And I think at the emotional and human levels, Surely, once you get beyond the politics, so before you get to the politics, often human contact precedes politics. I'm sure that people, Kashmiris, across the religious divide, get along with each other. But there's also been a generation now of separation, not just of growing up without each other, but of frankly demonizing of each other. So Nanda told me the first time she went, the time I wasn't with her, there was still some ruin standing, and there were bits and pieces of the family mandir and some of the idols. And she tried to pick up the idols and clean up, and she asked one of the local village boys to help her. And this kid, who was all of 10 years old or something, said, "You're a Hindu? Where are your horns?" Because he had been brought up to believe that Hindus were devils who had horns. Now, this is Sunanda's story, and one has to make some allowances for whatever color she may have added to it. But if that is the level of, if you like, estrangement that child felt, can you imagine now 25 years of generations growing up and not really knowing the other than as a demonized entity? I'm sure that it's going to be very difficult to put this Humpty Dumpty together again.
As a writer of and observer of contemporary history, does it remind you of the partition of India and Pakistan at a microcosm?
No, there's an important difference, Barkha. Partition was seen in the end as a little more definitive, and those who migrated essentially made new lives where they'd migrated to. Whereas, sadly, this is in some ways more reminiscent of the Palestinians, who still, there are people in the refugee camps in Lebanon who clutch keys of their homes in what is today Israel. And I think for many pundits of a certain generation, there is still this elusive sense that home is there. In fact, I think Siddharth's story that you were talking about, his grandmother speaks of home 20 years after having lost that home. And that's normal. But the new generation, Varad's and Siddharth's generation, ask them if they'll ever go back. And I think their answer is more important than mine.
Of course, I will love to go back, but there should be the conditions.
What condition? What is the primary condition? Is it that there is no home to go back to physically? Is it that there is an emotional rupture that you don't trust that it's healed? Or is it that you just feel physically unsafe?
Physically unsafe. There is emotional barrier as well. And first and foremost, there should be justice. When we talk about Kashmiri Pandits, we always talk about return and rehabilitation, where to settle them, though government doesn't ask us.
First, you know, this word justice is a very interesting word, because a number of Kashmiri Muslim friends of mine also talk about justice. And in places of violent conflict, there are injustice, and there's injustice and mourning and grief in cross ideological divides. So do you ever think about that everybody has suffered, and maybe therefore what you need is healing?
That is absolutely true. Their pain can also exist, like our pain as well.
Yes.
But for our justice, I will name Yasin Malik. He has killed some 20-30 militants.
Pandits.
And Yasin Malik has blood of four Indian Air Force officers. Still he is roaming free. So if I stay in Kashmir, my killer is roaming free. So how can I feel safe?
So here's the complexity of this conversation, that in all conflict zones at some point, can there be truth and reconciliation? Can you open a dialogue process with you know, Yasin Malik today, General Hussain would argue that I have now left the gun. So come and talk to me. So, but when you talk to a pundit, they find that a very unacceptable formulation. Neeru, one of the really interesting things that you wrote about was you actually went to what some Kashmiri Muslims call the Shaheed Mazar. Now, this is, as people who know Srinagar will know, is where militants and separatists are actually, their bodies are buried. And you got to know of these two boys who became militants, and you wanted to go to their graves. I found that, I want to understand that. What made you, as a Kashmiri Pandit, want to go to a graveyard where militants and separatists are brought to be buried? And you even write at some place that you believe that they were true to what they believed. You know, you were even able to say that.
Yeah, but they fought for. It's not like Yasin Malik who, you know, changes his strategies the way he wants with time. They fought, they died for whatever reasons. That may not be, you know, that brought suffering to my community. But at least they were honest with whatever they were fighting for.
What did you think of sitting at this graveyard?
I don't know. I can't, you know, because that visit was a pilgrimage for me. It was not just a homecoming and, you know, looking for places that my childhood
was there.
But this
would be, in your mind, the graveyard of people who were responsible for your...
Yes.
For your exodus. And yet you went to their graveyard.
Yes, I did. I had that courage to go there. I had that humanity in me. And I had, I don't know the reason, but I something came into my mind and I just wanted to visit them. Perhaps if they were alive, I could have met them also to understand what their politics is. Their politics resulted in not only exodus, but killing of many of my people.
But you wanted to understand what it was that drove them.
What it was. Yeah, as you were talking about the, you know, the environment and whether we want to go there. Without justice, everything is futile.
Now, I'm going to ask, who defines justice in a contested, competing set of narratives? So, Siddharth, to start with, there is a huge debate over who was responsible for this exodus. So, for example, you've had a number of Kashmiri Muslims saying that Jagmohan as governor played a part. And then there is the other narrative that it was simply the militants and the then government, which was the National Conference government, did nothing to protect the pundits. Even today, justice is a contested idea in Jammu and Kashmir. So who's going to come in and define justice for whom? Ideally, it should be justice for all. But the moment you want justice for all, there's a collision there.
You know, this is what happened in 1990. Historically, this is the seventh exodus of Kashmiri pundits from Kashmir. Because of there is a history of, you know, 5,000 years. During one of those eras, you know, there was only one king, Sultan Zainul Abidin Badshah, very revered. He was the only person who got pundits back that time. And he established their homes. He allowed them to erect new temples and he abolished the jizya. I think we would need
A modern day Badshah.
But that has to be one person with a vision. It can't be government, it can't be politicians. Maybe it will take generations from now.
And my worry is, will it be too late? Let's come back to this. I want both you and Shashi to speak to this contested narratives. And what's broken down is the dialogue, the intra-community dialogue.
Let me remind you this whole concept of forgiveness. The cases of the Jews suffering at the hands of the Nazis, 70 years down the line, has anyone forgiven anyone? And more recently, 1994, the Holocaust in Rwanda. I was there in the middle of that Holocaust. Well, as a UN observer there. There again, there's no question, because there's an age-old tribal conflict, which there's no question of forgiveness. When you replicate that, you just apply that kind of a model to Kashmir, you realize we are only 26 years away, 26th year. A generation has grown up. I think this generation is still, the things are still too fresh in their minds. The question of forgiveness on their part is remote, I think, at the moment. And that is why they're demanding justice. And justice, as you very correctly say, on the other side, from the Kashmiri Muslim, they're saying is that we too have suffered. If you start the blame game and say, who started this entire thing? Then you point your finger across the line of control and say, they started it. That brings you to the ultimate thing, could it have been prevented? And the more important question, if they go back tomorrow, will it happen again?
To which? Yeah. Because it's my job to just ask the contrarian question. To which a Kashmiri Muslim might say, even we don't have 100% protection. Say,
that's a perceived notion. There's no doubt about it. They feel that they have suffered primarily at the hands of the security forces and more at the hands of the army. But in such a situation, you know that in 26 years of conflict of this kind, the population always suffers. They are the ones in the middle. So I would not say that suffering is more perceptional than anything else. Here is an eviction from your homeland. And kind of experience that which has been put down in this book. People you've grown up with, overnight shunning you. This is an amazing, and that is the revelation in this book which has really come about. All the stories talk about this. The aspect that we never expected it.
Yeah.
We thought that our neighbors will be our protectors.
But I come back to what now? You know, there has been this cliched concept of truth and reconciliation mooted for Jammu and Kashmir on the South African model. What would it even mean? You know, there was a proposal for townships, separate townships for Kashmiri pundits to go back, and immediately there was an outcry that if you come back, you have to come back into composite townships, you have to come back into multi. How do you see this proposal of separate townships?
I've spoken to a number of pundits who will find reconciliation very difficult. Now, as I say, I never lose sight of the others. I mean, I keep mentioning Vijay Dhar as an example of somebody who stayed through it all, is still there, is making a contribution to society. But some of the difficulties, pundits were actually scattered throughout the valley. You saw them, a handful of families, number of villages. Those have all gone. The houses are burned down or knocked down or reoccupied. They are also too scattered for General Hasnain's boys to protect them, because ultimately you cannot deploy your army in every village in the valley. Mm. So what you're coming down to is, if you want to enforce the right of return, it is to create new artificial communities. But I do ask myself, what is the point? They're not going back home. Absolutely. They're going to an artificial new township, which never existed until it was built. Number two, you will be in the valley, but you will not be part of the Kashmir that your parents remembered, where you had neighbors, you had a normal life, you had a functioning existence. You're in the place, but not off the place. Mm. Would that really mean anything to Kashmiri pundits? I don't know.
So the picture Shashi is painting is that there is no going back, or there's no reconciliation by itself. But if these townships were to exist, and let me just ask Siddharth, Varad and Neeru what they think about this, it would actually defeat the idea of home.
Well, I wonder, because, you know, it's not just the mountains and the snow and the Mughal gardens. For that matter, we would rather have a township in Himachal Pradesh, you know. Mm. But of course, I'm completely opposed to an idea of a separate township. I don't want to live in a flat and then barricaded and then, you know, the security protecting us.
Yeah.
I want to go back to my old house, you know. It's still there.
Who lives in it now?
There's a family there. I met them, you know, a few years ago. And they welcomed me there. You know, in my room, there were some remnants still there. I could see a kind of a sticker pasted with my initials. So that experience has been completely, it's like out of fiction. You know, that doesn't happen in real life. But of course, I want to go back to my own house, you know, because that's where my ancestors lived, you know. And I want to have that sense of belonging, because as I grow old, you know, I have a... there's a sense of burden.
So you would not want to go back to a separate township?
Not at all. Not at all. I don't want to live in a flat.
Varad?
Even I don't think separate flat township will be in homecoming. See, my house is there in home, is there in Akura. It's still there, dilapidated. Nobody is there. We didn't sell it. We don't want to sell it. That is my only connection with Kashmir.
Hmm. What would be a real homecoming?
Ideally, to go back to their own homes.
As a typical security man, let me tell you, to imagine that you're going to have 100% return of everyone from Jammu back to the valley on one single day is utopian. I'm looking at the whole issue of seeding the solution. There are existing properties still in the valley, which have not been sold off in distressed sales and things like that. There is a feasibility that you give them loans, etc., let those families go back and give them guaranteed security in the valley floor.
Is this realistic?
There are still some people alive, maybe of the previous generation, who can go back and around whom. That's the one way of around whom this whole thing can build back.
I'm going to take a couple of comments from the audience as we start taking some last comments. Go ahead.
My family was a victim of partition, because, you know, suddenly one day everything becomes a zero.
Yeah.
But then you cannot compare that, because that, you know, the next day that becomes a different country. So there is no going back. No one is giving you a hope.
Yeah.
Here what is happening is that... There is constant noise of hope. Yes, this will happen. This will be restored. And nothing breaks you like, you know, hope given and hope taken back.
I just want to get Vijay in.
Firstly, of course, I would agree. I'm opposed to the ghettos. I think there's no difficulty in every Kashmiri Pandit, whoever wants to go back to his own home. Second, I want to ask you a question. What have we really done in the last 60 years in Kashmir?
And you mean that we've not even moved to resolving or moving ahead a genuine peace process? And that's that I would agree with you.
I have suffered. My community has suffered. But at the same time, I don't think anybody realizes that one generation has been wiped out.
Yeah.
You can blame anybody.
So I'm hearing you say that till there is a larger, sustainable, institutionalized dialogue process, these fault lines will continue to ride.
Dr. Farooq is here now. I would even like to know from him, what have we done in the last 60 years? I mean, why are our youth restive today? Why do we feel that we are not welcome?
Now, Farooq Saab, in that in that year, which you yourself have called the darkest chapter of Jammu and Kashmir, and you've even said even if we ask for forgiveness, hame forgiveness nahi milegi. What happened? How did this Kashmiriyat go up in smoke, and what can change it today? Do we need someone to stand up and first take responsibility for what happened? You remember, you were chief minister. A lot of people, the BJP and so on, have turned around and said the national conference must answer for this.
First and foremost thing, let's make one thing clear. After independence, it was the policy played by the center where people suddenly felt that they are not really thinking of people of Kashmir.
You mean the Congress?
Whoever was in power.
It was the Congress for most of those years.
Whoever is in power. There was a deep divide. Examination took place. No Muslim qualified. My father wrote a letter that this is not going to work. You have to balance between the majority and the others. Now, before this independence, there was hardly an education. He can tell you that in Muslims. Muslim got educated, free education. And when they got qualified, they wanted their position. Till then, it was all Kashmiri Pandits who were controlling almost every sector of the hierarchy. Is that true or not?
But whether it was in the government, how does that government justify positions, whether it was in the how education. Does that justify pushing them out
hold
of their
on,
home?
Hold on. I'm telling you, you want to know something, then you better know. Have some patience. And then, when this thing rose, suddenly Muslims started getting their jobs and Hindus started feeling that they are not getting their due. That started the trend in them that we have probably no place. So instead of we creating, both by center and the state, a situation whereby the minority and the majority felt they have got equal positions, this divide would not have taken place. I remember fighting election in 1983. And in Habba Kadal, I said, look, to the Kashmiri Pandits who is to be in majority in their place, I said, remember, in Kashmir, it will be the Musliman who will protect you. And in Jammu, the Musliman will be protected by the Hindu because of the majority of them. You know what they said to me? They said, Farooq Abdullah is trying to threaten us. The fact was that the divide between the Hindus and Muslims grew. And nobody started looking into it as to how to try and balance it. And the tricks played by Delhi were always the ones. Now, I was dismissed. What was the reason of my dismissal? Because I would not bow. They want you to be the chief there, with not looking at the interests of the people, but looking at the interests of Delhi.
Position
must change.
I want you to look ahead, but do you agree partially with what Farooq Abdullah
said?
Well,
in that particular instance, I've actually written about this,
yes,
in India
about
from
the
midnight to the millennium.
Farooq Saab
did something which actually should have been seen in Delhi as a welcome sign of the degree of Kashmiri integration into the union.
Which is?
Because he led the national opposition. He was the convener of, what was it called?
Yes.
The NDA, the National Democratic Alliance. And instead of seeing that as an astonishing sign that a Kashmiri leader is actually leading a national opposition force, it was seen as grounds for getting him dismissed by suborning his own brother-in-law and all of that stuff. So, I'm not a fan of what happened at that time. I think mistakes were definitely made. But I think, in all fairness, that what we've seen in the last 10, 15 years in Kashmir is a different story. I think elections have been free and fair.
Yeah.
Turnout has been genuine. Democracy has deepened. I think Farooq Saab is right about the past, but we must now dwell in the present.
As I have been saying always, don't wait till the last gun stops firing
to come home.
Many of them have sold their homes, their lands. There's nothing. It's only very few who still have maintained and are still living there in their homes. They have to realize one thing. Nobody is going to come with a begging bowl and say, come and stay with us. They have to make the move.
Why do
and
they have to make the move?
Because
they don't feel
now
safe.
Now, you want to know, when the government made a move that their officers and doctors who are here should come back, they came to see me and said, look, our children are now in schools here. Our parents are ill and they need medical care. We can't take them back. So for God's sake, let us live here. Many of them have made their own homes here.
But that's not out of choice,
that
Farooq,
is the tragedy
sir.
Of it.
But that's not out of
houses there. Their home is not here. They have only made houses.
My home is not here. I belong to Kashmir.
And there is
but
a difference
I always
between
say,
house
don't
and
wait. You don't have to wait.
There's
who are you waiting for
between
to
claim
take you?
And house.
You think Farooq Abdullah will hold your hand and say, please come and stay here?
I've never
it's not going to happen.
No, I do not expect
okay,
anything
can
from
we
the
hear
state.
Diru. Farooq Saab says,
come home.
Where is that home?
Where is the home, Farooq Saab?
Where you
it's
sold?
Not about the
did you
begging
sell your
bowl.
Home? Did
it's
you sell your home?
It's not about the begging bowl.
Please,
you said that
I want to ask you one question. Answer me straight. Have you sold your home there?
No.
Where is your home there?
It's in Habbagadal. Chinkral Mohalla.
Is it still there?
Yeah, it's still there, but then people have occupied the place.
Who has occupied it?
The neighbors.
Well, you come and see me, I will get those neighbors out.
Is
if it is still in yours and you have not sold it.
Is that all? You would be there for one day? Is that all? And it's only about house?
Yeah, yeah.
You talked about people
but you
coming
want a home.
Okay, Farooq Saab, let me come here.
One minute.
You don't want
Maharaja's palace. No. Nobody is asking for palaces. We're just asking for home.
Take your
we
home.
We're asking for justice.
Farooq Saab, it's not that simple.
13 years. Look.
No, there's one thing. There's
how
one
many
thing.
Years is it now?
26.
There's one point
26
I want
years.
To make. There's one point one I want to make. I
you
don't
have
want
to make a move.
Are you saying, Farooq Abdullah, that a community that was forced into exodus because of militant violence and not being given the protection that a state should have been able to provide to, today the onus is on them to come home?
Yes. Onus is on them to come home.
General Hussain, how would you respond to that?
All respect to you. I think you are the symbol of the best value of integration in Kashmir. You carry that value around. Your party also very, very much. Why can't you today take the initiative on this?
Yes.
The aspect is not.
Yes.
No, sir. Initiative. You get this right. Get this
I
right.
I want to know. No,
get this
sort
right.
What initiative would you
yeah.
want me to take?
Yes. First of all, sir, it is not a physical initiative of going and asking people. It's a question of sending out a message to them, meeting them many times, and ensuring that the security forces, anyone else in administration,
General,
is dedicated to their protection.
General Saab, I met them even as the chief minister. I met
come.
Them even after that.
They will come.
Number of times
conference.
I've gone to their people,
the
their places to say, please.
So it needs
every other.
So
not only I.
It is not a simple
even
problem.
The Buriat, their leaders have come to you and told you, please come.
It is not a simple problem, sir. And you also realize it. It's a transformational kind of a leadership which only you can provide.
Sir,
I'm telling you.
I am telling
only you.
Only
you can provide.
Frankly, unless they make the first move. It is tough to make a move.
I think everyone is afraid of being the first family that returns to their old homes. They are greeted with much fanfare. Everyone goes away at night and then somebody comes after them with a gun or a bomb. No one wants to be the guinea pig. Until the first few families come back and are safe, others will not come. And Farooq Saab, despite having his heart in the right place, can't guarantee that security.
The problem here was, when I met then the Home Minister, Advani Ji, and we were thinking of getting them back, and we said, let Government of India put a sort of a, many of the homes have disappeared, to make that home, we give them a diagram of this is the type of house you have to make, and then we tell them, here is this sum for the first floor. When you do the base and you start the first floor, we release the first amount. Then they need the structure to go up, we release the second amount. And then, once the house is ready, then we provide them, not kaleens, but decent furniture, the basic needs of the people, we put them in their house from the government.
But you have to call the family volunteering to take
it. It all fizzled away.
Family volunteering. Somebody has to take that first step. And you can't
and
say
when
to
we
them,
took the first step, let me tell you, we took the first step when Gujral Saab took over, we said first 50 trucks, buses were prepared to come and settle down. That very day, the terrorists killed innocent people in Ganderbal, if you remember.
Yes.
One boy was only survived. And then in Budgam,
Vendama.
Yes, where they were also murdered. We stopped that immediately. We said no.
Siddharth, you've heard Farooq Saab. He's saying you have to take the initiative. I'm hearing you say take the initiative yourself. Militancy has reduced, come back home. What would you say to Farooq Saab as your last comment?
No, two things. We don't want a house. We want a home. So there is a big difference here.
Very well said. Farooq Saab, we don't want a house. We want a home.
So
who's saying there is not a home for them? Who says? Every Kashmiri says, you are most welcome. You are part of us.
So I'll take one question.
It's not fair to kind of tell us that we can have our own land back, frankly, because Kashmir actually did belong to the Pandits well before. I personally see it. I grew up there.
This is the thing. How much
I grew up there. No, no.
No, no. When we, Farooq Saab also said this, you're also doing it. How much back in history are we going to
go? No. I have a suggestion. Let's put up an article that allows, that doesn't allow Muslim Kashmiris to buy land outside of Kashmir first. Okay? Let them not buy land outside of Kashmir.
And then what?
And then what? No, they let them go back to Kashmir.
No, how will that help you? How will that help the Pandits?
I think that will at least let them get a sense of what they have done.
Okay, General Hasnain. Let me
don't do what you see. You are speaking out of emotions. There's no doubt. This is a very emotional thing which we are talking about.
Yeah.
But doing a thing
like
that...
Are you fighting fire with fire?
Doing a thing like that is only going to push the Kashmiri Muslims into Pakistan.
Yeah.
Were you on that?
One more question here. Yes.
Both the Hindus and the Muslims must find solace and peace in the words of Emerson. How vain it is to sit down and write when I haven't stood up to live. All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all I have not seen.
Shashi.
No, there is no easy solution to this. I think that's a very important insight. What they're looking for is home.
Yeah.
And that sense of home would require a fundamental change in the circumstances in Kashmir, in the end to the militancy, in the end to the willingness of our neighbors to finance, sponsor, and push through that militancy. I think that there is undoubtedly a situation in which when things are totally peaceful and normal, some more people may be willing to go back, and we can only hope for that day.
I go back to my original idea. You are not going to find total peace at any time in the next 20 years, right? To say that today you have peace or emerging peace, I think is a completely wrong understanding of the situation. You will have to see the situation. You will have to keep encouraging, keep talking. It should not be only Kashmiri Pandits. I don't know why aren't there Kashmiri Muslims here today.
I think that's a good
point. They should
all
be here today.
Yes.
We should all be talking in a bigger hall and let all talk. I think, look at social media and you will get an idea of actually where we are. I am a member of many Voices of Kashmir, right? And I monitor that. I can tell you, in many cases, the antipathy which existed in 89 exists even today.
I think you're making a very important point, Siddharth, that this should be not a dialogue only within Pandits, but it should be a dialogue between Pandits and Muslims.
Yeah, on behalf of all the contributors who contributed this, you know, I have a bounden responsibility and a moral duty to take this book home. I mean, I want to take this book to Kashmir. I would request Barkha if you would host such a show in Srinagar. And, you know, the young generation of Kashmir, of course, we are getting fantastic reviews from there.
But Muslims and Pandits must talk to each other.
They have a right to know.
Bharat, very quickly.
I disagree with Farooq Saab. Kashmiri politicians ki aadat hai bolne ki, markaz ki chaal hai. That is what he said. कि दिल्ली इज टू
पर आगे आप बताइए रिकंसिलिएशन आपको कहां नजर आता है आपको कहां नजर आता है भरत
रास्ता बताइए ना
लाइक वी टॉक अबाउट इंडो पाकिस्तान रिलेशंस सीबीएम्स कॉन्फिडेंस बिल्डिंग मेजर्स सो जस्टिस शुड बी द कॉन्फिडेंस बिल्डिंग मेजर फॉर कश्मीर
ओके नीरू
जस्टिस फर्स्टली we are children of lesser gods that's fine we have understood we are vote banks we are midgets for the state that's fine we have understood in 26 years we have got enough time to understand this time and again He himself said that militancy kam ho gaya and after some time he himself said ki humne kuch try kiya tha logon ko wapas aane ki aur Gandarbal mein ye cheez ho gaya and then he
okay,
asked
Farooq Saab your last word no I'm really out of time your last word on your beyond ki aap aaiye ye to aapne ek baat boli iske beyond aap kya kahenge how do we heal the wounds
you see Wounds will take time to heal. It's not a small thing. Many people have died on all sides. Muslims have died. Hindus have died. I have lost hundreds of my workers. top ministers, my MLAs who have been bombed off.
Agreed.
My own cousin, first cousin, shot off by the man I had to release for that damn plane in Kandahar. And he just came out of the door and they shot him there and then. And I was in Bhopal trying to, for the Congress, fighting for their election. And they shot him, waiting for me to go back so that they'll shoot me. Point here is, we know the troubles we have faced. Hurt is every side. It's not only on his side. Hurt is our side also. I've also lost people, dear ones. Therefore, either we live in that hate and that tragedy, or we move forward. And the way forward is not by only remembering tragedy. We have to start thinking that if we have to build a new life, we must start here. And that life cannot start by thinking of negative ways. If we start thinking negative, now how is Vijay living? How does Vijay started a school which is so popular to get admission in this damn school? Even if I speak to him, I can't get admission.
Okay, Vijay, last word to you. Really, I really have to end. Please.
Last word is that I think all of us, and particularly Delhi, should accept a Kashmiri, be it a Hindu, be it a Muslim. I don't think a Kashmiri has been accepted.
I have never been. It's what my father hasn't been accepted. So what of me?
I will give you one anecdote. The Home Minister.
But I still stand Home with India.
Home Minister of India visited the school, and the kid got up and she said, "Sir, I came to the school with my I card, with my books and with my bag. I was stopped at the gate." So he said, "Why?" He said, "Because they told me the Home Minister of India is coming."
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you're really saying you're still not accepted? You?
It's not a question of, look, do you think they trust me? What are you saying?
Okay.
हम ही हैं जो बैठे हैं ये कि अल्लाह ऊपर है और वही देखने वाला है मगर मैं अपना रास्ता बदलाने वाला नहीं.
Okay, we will leave it there. The
और इसलिए इनसे भी कहता हूँ.
Next conversation.
नफरतें भूल जाओ. अगर हम नफरतों में रह जाएंगे, हम कभी वो रास्ता नहीं बना सकते.
Next conversation in Srinagar, where we will Neeru, Farooq, Abdullah, Bharat, Siddharth, General Hastel, Shashi Tharoor. Thank you so much. Thank you. We have to end it here.